Of Sfira Sa'omer. There's a lot to talk about Sfira, but one observation that Rav Soloveitchik makes is that if you look in the various mitzvahs in the Torah that we observe, we find that the Jew very often seems to be counting. The Jew counts days, the Jew counts weeks, the Jew counts years, the Jew counts Shemitahs. The Jew counts 6 days and celebrates a Shabbos, count 49 days and we celebrate a Shavuos. We know that we count 7 years and we celebrate a Shemitah. We count 49 years of Shemitah cycles and we celebrate a Yovel. And not only that, we find in two other areas of Halacha as well that counting is a very important object. Counting is something that we need to do. For example, if you have somebody who is defiled, somebody who is impure, so the Halacha dictates that they have to count a 7-day period of purity, and only then are they able to go and immerse themselves in the mikvah. And furthermore, we find, if unfortunately a person is in a state of avelus, in a period of mourning, once again, we find that counting plays a major role. We have the Shiva, we have the Shloshim, which culminates in the Yud Beis Chodesh. You have 7 days, 30 days, culminating in the entire year. So counting plays a major role in religious life. And we'll get back to that at the end, why that is the case. But let's first spend a couple of minutes trying to understand perhaps some similarities and maybe some differences between the various counting mitzvahs that we find. So one mitzvah that we find is in Parshas Bahar. In Parshas Bahar we are told the following, V'safar telecha, and we have an obligation, a communal obligation, to count sheva shabbosos, to count 7 weeks, sheva shanim, sheva pa'amim, to count, 7 cycles of 7 years, V'hayu lecha yimei sheva shabbosos hashanim, we have an obligation to count 7 cycles, which will culminate in a Yovel. After counting 49 years, we have the 50th year is going to be Yovel. And the Rambam says that this is an obligation that is not incumbent upon every individual person. It's an obligation that is incumbent upon the Jewish people as a whole. And therefore, the Rambam states that only the Beis Din HaGadol, as representatives of all of us Jews, there's one basic rabbinic authority that does the job on behalf of all of us and counts on behalf of the entire Jewish people when we're up to, which year we're up to out of the 50, out of the 49 years of Yovel. The Rashba writes in a tshuva, how do we know that it only applies to the Beis Din HaGadol? Why shouldn't it be like everything else where the Torah instructs us to do something? It's something that every individual person has to do. So the Rashba says, if you look carefully, the pasuk says, V'safarta lecha in the singular. When we have Sfira Sa'omer, over there, what does the pasuk say? Usvartem lachem. That means, plurally, we have an obligation together. Each and every person, on their own, has to do it, and that's why it's in the plural. Says the Rashba, here, when we have the mitzvah of counting Shemitah cycles and years of the Shemitah up until the Yovel, it says, Visafarta lacha. Since it's said in the singular, therefore the Rashba argues, it's done by a singular body on behalf of the entire Jewish people. Now, I could have argued the other direction, that if it would have been plural, that means, plurally, we should all do it. The understanding of the Rashba, but that's basically the way that he understands this mitzvah that the Rambam expounds upon. Now, the question is, I don't know if any of us have ever been to Eretz Yisrael, I don't know if any of us have ever seen, but I don't know about you, but I've never seen a sign that's hung up on Rosh Hashanah of every year that says, this is year 35 out of the 49 years, this is year 36. Nowhere do we find such a thing. So what happened? The Torah gives us a mitzvah, and the Torah said you're supposed to be counting every year up until you reach the pinnacle, which is the Yovel, and seemingly we've totally neglected and forgotten about this mitzvah. What happened? So the Rambam explains, based on a Gemara and Erichin Daf Lamed Beis, that the Pasuk tells us when it comes to the mitzvah of counting these years, this cycle of Yovel, the Pasuk says, Ukrasem diror ba'aretz lechol yoshveha. Upon the culmination of the Yovel, of the counting the 49 years, so it says, you have to call that year a jubilee year, lechol yoshveha, for all of the inhabitants of the land. So what does it mean, all the inhabitants of the land? So the Gemara learns from here that it means, only bizman shekol yoshveha aleha. The only time you have an obligation to count those years of Yovel and keep that count up until year 50 is when we have the entire Jewish people, or most of the Jewish people, living in the land of Israel. However, when you live at a time like ours, I was told it's pretty close now. I was told it's close that I heard that, I don't know if it's true, but I heard that we're pretty close to the point where the majority of Jews live in the land of Israel. I don't know if that's a true statement or not, but that's what somebody has told me. My father told me here the same thing. But whether or not that's the case will make a very important difference for this mitzvah of counting the years of Yovel. The only time we have an obligation of counting the years of Yovel on behalf of the Jewish people is when we have all or most of the Jewish people living in the land of Israel. But in our society, in our generation, when unfortunately we don't have that opportunity and we don't have that reality, that's why this mitzvah somewhat falls by the wayside. Now, there is a general question that the Rishonim raise when we talk about that mitzvah of counting the years of Yovel. What exactly do we mean? Does it mean that the Beis Din, that the rabbinic authority, has to get up every year and hang up a sign and make a bracha and say, Asher Kedushanam Mitzvosa Vitzivanu Al Sviras Shnei HaYovel? Is that what we have to say? And we have to say, this year Hayom Yom Hashana, this year is year one out of the Shemitah, which is year one out of the 49, or do we just have to keep track in our minds, but not that we have to do a particular count that's going to be specified, that's going to be spoken out, but just that the Beis Din has to keep in mind. So nowadays that we have a computer and we can keep track much more easily without having to pronounce anything, maybe that should be good enough. That's a big discussion in the Rishonim, but again, this is the first counting mitzvah we find in Chumash. We find yet again a second form of counting, which the Torah describes in great detail, and that is when we have a person who has some sort of physical impurity. So the Torah states, V'safra la shivas yamim. 7 days have to be counted in order for the person to be able to immerse in the mikvah. Once again, when it comes to that mitzvah of counting the 7 days until one is able to become pure, there is a major discussion about how exactly to understand that mitzvah. When a person is impure and they have to count those 7 days, is there any particular mitzvah that's given that I have to get up every day and say, today is day one of the 7 days out of the week that I'm going to count. And then the next day I have to get up and say, today is day two and today is day three. Do I really have to do that? Or does it mean that no, the person just has to keep in the back of their mind where they're up to and make sure they don't lose track of what's going on and where they're holding in that week? So again, very similar to the discussion that was had with regard to Yovel, the Rishonim have the same discussion once again when it comes to the 7 days of counting purity and impurity. And finally, we have our mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. Now, Sfiras HaOmer is a very complicated mitzvah. And if you look in what Reb Zevin writes, the first entry on the source sheet, Reb Zevin was a great, a tremendous writer in the mid-1900s. He wrote a lot of book reviews, he wrote a lot of interesting articles, and Reb Zevin writes an article about Sfiras HaOmer, and in that he writes the following, Lo Rav Hu HaMakom Shehukdash Ba'ofen Yashir LeHilchos HaSfira. He says, there is not so much ink that is spilled in the primary sources, which discuss in great detail Sfiras HaOmer. Daf Echad B'Talmud, you'll look through all of Shas, you'll find only one page in Shas which discusses the laws of Sfiras HaOmer. Arba Halachos B'Rambam, only four paragraphs in the Rambam, four sentences, that's it. V'Simen Echad B'Tur V'Shulchan Aruch. So it's one chapter in Shulchan Aruch, four sentences in the Rambam, and one page of Gemara. And yet he says, although there is very little in the primary sources about the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, only very few psukim in Chumash, only one page of Gemara, only four sentences in the Rambam, and only one chapter of the Shulchan Aruch, yet he says, somehow this has flowered into a tremendous amount of literature that revolves around the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. He says, over the generations, we've had so much discussion, rich discussion and debate about the laws of Sfiras HaOmer. For anyone who's on their phone, I can watch you on here. You know, there's a video that shows me what's going on in the seats. I'm just kidding. There really is, but you can do whatever you have to do. So the Reb Zevin writes that we find that there's so much rich discussion and literature when it comes to the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, even though in the primary sources itself, we don't find that there is so much mention. So the discussion really begins with the pasuk once again in Parshas Bahar. So you look at number 2 on the source sheet, and there the pasuk instructs us about the mitzvah of counting Sfiras HaOmer. Usvartem lachem mimacharas HaShabbos. We have a mitzvah to count mimacharas HaShabbos. Now this was a major point of debate. What does it mean? You have to count from the day after Shabbos? We know that we begin to count Sfiras HaOmer on the second day of Pesach. But not always does the first day of Pesach fall out on a Shabbos. So what does the Torah mean when it says, Mimacharas HaShabbos? So here, that was a major point of debate, a major point of dispute. And we find that when it comes to this discussion, The Torah tells us that Mimachros HaShabbos means not the day after our colloquial Shabbos that we call Shabbos, but Mimachros HaShabbos after the first day of Pesach. Miyom HaViyachem Es Omer HaTnufa. Another pointer to know when you're supposed to start counting the Sfira is Miyom HaViyachem Es Omer HaTnufa, from the day that you bring the Karban Omer in the Beis HaMikdash. So you're supposed to count Sheva Shabbosos, 7 weeks, Tamimos Tehiyana, you're supposed to count 7 weeks straight, until you culminate in the 50th day, which is the Yom Tif, the holiday of Shavuos. So this is a very simple pasuk, seems to be very simple to us. I do recall one of the Hasidish Svarim writes, maybe that's why we call the Shabbos before Pesach, Shabbos HaGadol. It's not clear, what is so unique, what's so special about that Shabbos? We don't have any special mitzvahs that are given, so again, a lot of communities have practices that they do on that Shabbos. They recite the Haggadah or they do different things, but there's no real mitzvah that we have on that particular Shabbos. So why do we call it Shabbos Haggadol, the big Shabbos? So one of the Svarim writes, perhaps the suggestion is because don't confuse it with what this pasuk says, Shabbos. Usvartem lachem imachros haShabbos. You start counting Sfiras HaOmer from the fake Shabbos, which is Yom Tov. And the Shabbos before that, we have the Shabbos HaGadol, which is the real Shabbos, that we generally call Shabbos, so don't confuse the two. Okay, a nice idea.
Shabbat Shabbaton, when it talks about the Mo'adim, it calls it Shabbat Shabbaton, right?
Only by Yom Kippur.
Only by Yom Kippur,
it's yeah.
Shabbat Shabbaton, not the other one?
Correct, only by Yom Kippur. And as a result of that discussion that Yom Kippur is called Shabbat Shabbaton, there is a discussion the Gemara has, I believe, in Maseches Megillah. The Gemara wants to know, how many aliyahs are supposed to be read from the Torah on a regular Monday and Thursday? And how many aliyos should we read on Rosh Chodesh and on a holiday and on Chol HaMoed and on Yom Tov and on Shabbos? What is the hierarchy? How do we figure out how many aliyos we're supposed to have? So the Gemara says, well, let's get real. During the week, everybody has to go to work and they don't have time to have a whole long Kriyat Torah. So we want people to learn, but we don't want them to be bogged down. So we have three aliyos, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, on a regular Monday and Thursday because everybody's rushing out. Then you go up the level. The next most holy day is Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh. Those are like quasi-holidays. Not totally, but quasi-holidays. And therefore we have four aliyos on those. The next holiest day is Yom Tov. And that's why we have five aliyos on a holiday, on a festival, because that is the next level up after Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh. After that comes the question. After that, what's the next holy? Is Shabbos the next or is Yom Kippur the next? So the Gemara has a debate. By Shabbos, it just calls it Shabbos. By Yom Kippur, it calls it Shabbat Shabbaton. So maybe Yom Kippur is more elevated, is more consecrated, is more holy than Shabbos is. And that's why the Gemara has a debate. Should we read seven aliyos, which is the highest level? Should we read seven aliyos on Shabbos? Because after all, Shabbos is Shabbos. Or do you say, no, you should read seven aliyos, the highest level, on Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur maybe is even more elevated, it's even more consecrated than the Shabbos is. So that's a very important discussion with regard to your question. But over here, we're just talking about the Yom Tov of Shavuos and the counting of Sfiras HaOmer leading up to that. So, again, the Pasuk told us that what triggers, what elicits, what activates the Sfiras HaOmer is Miyom HaViyachem Es Omer HaTnufa, from the day you start counting from the day that you offer the Karban in the Beis HaMikdash on the second day of Pesach. So the Rambam and the other Rishonim have a big discussion. Should we assume that Sfiras HaOmer nowadays is a biblical obligation, or is it only a rabbinic obligation? Why should it only be a rabbinic obligation? Why should it only be a rabbinic obligation? And one major distinction between whether or not it's rabbinic or it's biblical would be a very important case. Let's say you have Mincha Marv in the office every day. Just Mincha?
Just Mincha.
No Marv? But during the winter, you do.
Yes.
So many offices, daven mincha, let's say now, when the shkia is much later, so I would hope most people aren't in the office at 8 o'clock. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. Are you? Most people are? Okay. You come to my shir, you could have fooled me. I thought if you're at the 8 o'clock shir, it means you're not in the office anymore. But, okay. So anyway, some offices have a minyan for Marv, but some offices, people can't just keep leaving the office. So they have a minyan, let's say 6:30, they'll daven mincha and Marv one right after the other. So that's very nice, and you can do that. You can certainly do that. The question is, what about Sfiras HaOmer? Even if you can daven Marv a little bit early once it's already later on in the day, but after all, it's not nighttime yet. So what about counting during Bein HaShemashos? Bein HaShemashos is the twilight zone when we're not really sure, is it today, is it tomorrow, it's somewhere in the middle. So that's a major question. Is a person allowed to count Sviras HaOmer during the time of Bein HaShmashos? Or do we say, no, after all, this is a mitzvah that has to be done only at night, and therefore maybe you don't have a right to do that during Bein HaShmashos? So this is a very important question, and much of that discussion will hinge upon whether or not you assume that the mitzvah of Sviras HaOmer is biblical or it is rabbinic. After all, we have a principle that whenever you have a suffix, whenever you have a doubt by a mitzvah, which is a biblical mitzvah, so the halacha dictates that suffix daraisa l'chumra, you have to be stringent. When we come to a mitzvah, which is only midirabanan, when you have only rabbinic obligation, so then we say whenever you're in doubt, suffix darabanan l'kula. After all, it's only a rabbinic obligation in the first place, so you don't have to make yourself so crazy. The rabbis didn't obligate you to go so far. So over here as well, that would be a major point of distinction. If we assume that Sviras HaOmer nowadays is a biblical obligation like it always was, as the Torah states, that it means if a person counts Sviras HaOmer by one of those early minyanim, and you count during a time which is the twilight zone, and you're not sure if it's daytime or nighttime, you'll have to count again later. But if it's only rabbinic, and nowadays the nature of the obligation has changed from what it used to be, so then maybe we should say that there's room to be lenient, there's room to say that if a person counted during that twilight zone, during the suffix, that would not obligate them to go and count again. So this is a rich discussion, and the reason why we might assume that nowadays this is only a rabbinic obligation is because, as the Pasuk states, Miyom HaViyachemes Omer HaTnufa, the only time you have an obligation to start the count of Sfira is when you have the opportunity to offer the carbon on the Beis HaMikdash. That triggers, that elicits the response of Sfira Omer. But nowadays, when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and we don't have the carbonos, and we don't have that opportunity to have all of those experiences, so maybe we should argue that nowadays the Sfiras HaOmer as well is only going to be midirabanan. There is a discussion in the Gemara. One of the opinions feels that since nowadays Sfiras HaOmer is only midirabanan, maybe we should say that you should only count days and you should not count weeks. You should leave out half of the Sfiras HaOmer. Now that's a very strange kind of suggestion. Why would you say that just because nowadays it became a rabbinic obligation, therefore we should change the nature of the mitzvah, therefore we should no longer say it the way it used to be said? So perhaps the understanding to that, my father has suggested in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, maybe the answer to that goes as follows. You ever think about the fact that we count Svira, and Svira is a mitzvah that only comes around once a year. Generally, when we have a mitzvah that comes around once a year, such as lighting Hanukkah candles, blowing the shofar, reading the Megillah, we say, a bracha of Shechiyanu. We're very excited that we have the opportunity once a year to come back and perform the mitzvah the way we're supposed to. So how come once a year, when we count to Sfiras HaOmer during the period of year, why don't we do the very same? Why don't we also make sure to start off that bracha, start off that mitzvah by saying, Shechiyanu v'kiyamanu v'higiyanu l'zman hazeh? Wouldn't that make sense? Wouldn't that be something that is warranted as far as any other mitzvah goes that we only do once a year? We should do the same thing over here. So that is the question that is raised by the Rishonim. And the Rishonim answered that question by saying the following. Sfiras HaOmer, the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is, if you look in the bottom, the last entry on the source sheet, I see we just skipped a lot, but number Zion, the bottom entry on the source sheet. So one of the Rishonim writes, the reason why we don't say Shechiyanu is because Shalamatzinu Birchas Hazman. We don't find the Shechiyanu Ela Bedavar Sheyesh Bo Mishum Hana. We only say a bracha of Shechiyanu when it's a mitzvah that we're excited about. But Sfiras HaOmer, he says, is not something we're excited about. Ein bo shum zecher l'shum hana, ela la'agmas nafshenu l'churban beis ma'avayenu. Sfiras HaOmer reminds us of the terrible tragedy that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Sfiras HaOmer reminds us that we did not bring that karban as we were supposed to in the times when we had a Beis HaMikdash, when we had Yerushalayim, when we celebrated all together the Pesach festival together in the Makam HaMikdash on the Har HaBayis. We don't have that. And Sfiras HaOmer reminds us that we don't have that. And therefore, we shouldn't be saying Shechiyanu. What we should say, oh, thank you so much, God, for making us have the opportunity to once again count Sfiras HaOmer without a Beis HaMikdash. What good is that? No one's excited about that. And therefore, we do not recite the bracha of Shechiyanu when we have the opportunity to count Sfiras HaOmer now. So Sfiras HaOmer is something that reminds us of Churban. And if you'll notice, right after Sfiras HaOmer, what do we say? Both Sfardim and Ashkenazim say the same thing. Harachaman hu yachzer lanu avodas beis hamikdash. There's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. The one paragraph that we insert after the Sfiras HaOmer is a tefillah. It's a plea that now that we have counted Sfiras HaOmer and we have reminded ourselves that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash and we're not able to perform the mitzvah as we are supposed to. So we use this as an opportunity to ask God, please give us the chance next time to be able to count Svira the real way, to be able to have the karbanos being offered in the Beis HaMikdash, to give us the opportunity to do things the way they're supposed to be, to have Shavuos celebrated in your Beis HaMikdash, in your city of Yerushalayim. This is why we use the opportunity of Sfiras HaOmer to ask for that, because Sfiras HaOmer reminds us of the terrible tragedy, the churban of the Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of Yerushalayim. And perhaps with that in mind, this is also the understanding why the Gemara has an opinion that when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer, maybe nowadays that it's only a rabbinic obligation, maybe we should leave out half of the Sfira. Maybe we should only say, today is the day, we should leave out the weeks. Let us make it clear to anyone that counts Sfira that we're not doing the real thing. You're missing the boat, you're missing half of the mitzvah. If you really want to do the mitzvah, you need to have a Beis HaMikdash. You have to do it the right way, with a karban, with Yerushalayim, with the way things are supposed to be. We don't have the real mitzvahs the way they're supposed to be today. And maybe that's the reason why one of the opinions in the Gemara feels that most appropriate when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer is, don't count the regular way that the Torah instructed you. Show yourselves, show your children, show your families, and remind all yourselves that when you count Sfiras HaOmer, this is a very painful experience. This is something that reminds us of the fact that we are in a perpetual state of churban, unfortunately, one that we hope someday to get out of. So this is the backdrop to Sfiras HaOmer. Now the Shulchan Aruch tells us, any questions? Right, so the Torah has two different psukim. One says Shiva Shavuos Tispar Lach. One says you should count 7 weeks. And the other one says Tisparu Chamishim Yom. I should have put both on there, you're right. So there is a line in the Shulchan Aruch where the Shulchan Aruch tells us the following. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the opinion of the Bahag. The Bahag was the Baal Halachas Gedolos, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, one of the great Rishonim. And the Bahag was of the opinion that if a person misses one day of the Sfiras HaOmer, they're out. You miss one day of the Sfira, you can no longer continue to count at all. Now, the simple understanding of the Bahag's opinion is, why should you be out? So how do you understand that? Simple understanding is that you must say that the 49 days of Sfiras HaOmer are just one long mitzvah that has 49 different components, that has 49 different parts. And therefore, if you're going to break and you're going to miss one major component, meaning you fell asleep and you didn't have the chance to count Sfira and you missed the whole day of Sfira, then that mitzvah is now over. You can't pick up later on. Your mitzvah is now over. That's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins. And the Shulchan Aruch tells us that therefore, if a person forgets to count one night of Sfira HaOmer, he says that we don't fully adopt the opinion of the Bahag, but we adopt it partially. All the Rishonim disagree with the Bahag. All the Rishonim feel that he's wrong. All the Rishonim feel that every night of Sfiras HaOmer is a separate mitzvah. It's a separate entity unto itself. The Bahag alone is of the opinion that it's one long mitzvah with 49 different components, and therefore he says if you miss one, you're out. But all the other Rishonim disagree. So therefore he says, the Shulchan Aruch comes with the compromise opinion, and he says, look, if a person forgets one night of Sfiras HaOmer, you can keep counting, and you must keep counting, but you should keep counting without reciting a bracha. Because we have to assume that maybe the Bahag was correct, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. So therefore we don't want to risk making a bracha levatala. We don't want to make a bracha that is not necessary. So therefore we say what a person should do if they miss a whole day of Sfiras HaOmer is continue to count the rest of the days just without reciting a bracha. Yes? That is a very important question that many Acharonim discuss. If the Bahag is correct, why is it that we recite so many brachos over the 49 days of the Sfiras HaOmer? Why don't we just recite one bracha at the beginning and that should carry us through the entire duration? So what's clear is, if you look in many sources, it's clear that when the Chachamim, when the rabbis instituted the recitation of a bracha, they didn't institute the recitation of a bracha when a person just fulfills an entire mitzvah. They instituted the recitation of a bracha when a person fulfills even a part of a mitzvah. When you're engaged in a mitzvah, but you're doing a maisa ha-mitzvah right now, you're doing the act of a mitzvah right now, even if it's not going to be completed by the act that you're doing now, you still recite a bracha upon the act that you're doing right now. So for example, I move into a new house, I have to put up mezuzahs. I happen to only have one mezuzah. The sofer didn't drop off all the rest of them that I need. I need 20 of them for the house. So I tonight, put up the mezuzah on the front door. That's the only one I have. Now, a week later, I get all the rest of my mezuzahs, and I decide I want to go put them up. What do? Do I make another bracha? What would you say?
Yeah.
Of course. Why?
It's separate time,
but it's all part of one big mitzvah, which is to put up mezuzahs all over my house. So I have not yet completed my mitzvah by the first mezuzah that I put up. You have to put up all of them. But since you're doing the act of a mitzvah on each part, so again, if you're going to put up 20 in a row, so you make one bracha and you have in mind that it goes for all of them. But if you're going to have a break in between, the same way, if you're going to have one day break in between every act of the mitzvah of counting Sefiras HaOmer, we would say the same thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So every
right.
door is an individual mitzvah that you are accomplishing when you put up the mezuzah, as opposed to Sefiras HaOmer, which is one long, elongated mitzvah, mm-hmm. and you don't make a bracha if you miss a day because you broke
right.
the cycle and you haven't done it. So is that?
It's a question whether the parallelism is exactly
right.
the same, but you're raising a good point. But it's just something to think about. There are many other examples that are brought. Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik brought an example from the Yerushalmi, different examples that the Acharonim brought about where we find that you make various brachos, even though there's only one mitzvah in completion that's being done, but since there are various components of it, we will make a bracha. Very good question. Very good question that was raised. So, that is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. There's a story about Rabbi Meir Shapiro. Rabbi Meir Shapiro is very famous for being the one who instituted the Daf Yomi. He also had a very prominent yeshiva in Lublin. He had the yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, which was the first of its kind. It was a very glorious yeshiva in pre-war Europe, and it was something that took tremendous effort to put together. He lived from 1887. He passed away in 1933. So Rabbi Meir Shapiro was once coming to America to collect money for his new building that he wanted to put up for this beautiful edifice, the Lublini yeshiva. So they introduce him to a very wealthy individual in Manhattan, and this person didn't know, what am I going to talk to Rabbi Meir Shapiro about? I don't know anything about learning. He's a big Talmud Chacham. He has no interest in my business. What am I going to say? So he decided he's going to show off to Rabbi Meir Shapiro about how religious his family is. So he says, by the way, Rabbi Shapiro, I want you to know, we're in the middle of the days of Sefiras HaOmer now, and my family does so much preparation for Shavuos. Not only do we count Sefira every night, not only are we careful to do it the way we're supposed to, but also we make sure every night of Sefiras HaOmer, as we get ourselves ready for Shavuos, we make sure every night of Sefira to eat cheese latkes. Because on Shavuos, you have to eat cheese, right? That's a minhag that's quoted in the Ramah. You don't have to, but many people have that practice. He says, we want to get ourselves ready. So every night of Sefiras HaOmer, we eat the amount of cheese latkes that pertain to that evening of Sefiras HaOmer. So on day 30, our family makes sure to consume 30. On day 35, we have 35. So Rabbi Meir Shapiro doesn't know what to say. It sounds like a very silly minhag, but what's he going to tell him? So Rabbi Meir Shapiro responds to him. He says, let me just ask you, so what do you do if you forget one night? What do you do if you forget to have the dinner one night? So he says, Rabbi, it's no problem. We continue to eat the next night without making a bracha. So that's very similar to, that was Rabbi Meir Shapiro's pun from the story by Sefiras HaOmer. But seriously speaking, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says should be done if a person forgets to count Sefiras HaOmer. So we assume that is what we're supposed to do. Now the Radvaz was one of the great, great Rishonim in the 1400s. He was born in Spain in 1479. He later became the chief rabbi of Egypt. He became a very, very prominent individual, and he had very famous tshuva svarim that we rely on till today, that are really relied upon for many areas of halacha. So the following question was asked to the Radvaz. And they asked the Radvaz, why is it that when it comes to the Sefiras HaOmer, when it comes to the mitzvah of counting the Omer from the Yom Tov of Shavuos and starting with the holiday of Pesach, why is it that we have so many restrictions on how it's supposed to be done? You have to stand up, you have to make a bracha, you say HaRachman after, and everything, all the details, and if you miss a day, you have to count without a bracha going forward. And yet he says, when we have the mitzvah for a person to purify themselves and count 7 clean days, we don't find a bracha there. What's the difference? Here the Torah says, "V'safra lo," you have to count 7 clean days in order to be able to go to the mikvah. And over here the Torah says, "Usfartam lachem," same kind of terminology. Why should we split them? Why should we say there's any distinction at all? Why is it that we have all these rules and regulations when it comes to Sviros Omer, and yet when it comes to these other counts that the Torah prescribes, we don't find that the Torah has a bracha being recited, we don't find that the Torah regulates how you're supposed to do it, or whether you're supposed to stand up or sit down. What's the story? What is the difference? Explains the Radvaz as follows. The Radvaz writes, there's a major difference, and he quotes this from the earlier sources. The Radvaz says the difference goes as follows. If a person is counting 7 clean days, person has a natural impurity, they have some sort of discharge, a man or a woman, and now they have to count 7 clean days. So, that is very easy for it to be invalidated. It's very easy for that to be negated if they have some sort of emission that comes out at some point in those 7 days, and the whole thing is over. So that's why the Radvaz says, how can you make a bracha on such a thing? After all, you're going to make the bracha on day one, and then you're going to get cut off on day three, perhaps. So it doesn't make sense. How can you make such a bracha?
But also, what's the hana'ah? The same answer was before. What's hana'ah? I'm tamei, and I'm going to count the days that to remind myself every single day that I'm tamei. It's not something that...
So that was a question about why we don't say shehechiyanu.
But it would be the same answer. I'm saying the same logic should be appropriate here, too. Why we don't need to make a bracha during that time?
No, we recite a bracha on Sfirat HaOmer, Asher Kedishan Mitzvot HaVitzivanu Al Sfirat HaOmer. The further question was, why don't we recite two brachas on Sfirat HaOmer? Number one, a bracha Al Sfirat HaOmer, and number two, a bracha of Shehecheyanu. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to count Sfirah.
But didn't you just ask why the person who is the Zav or who is the whatever doesn't say bracha every one of the...
Right, so they should make a bracha like we count Al Sfirat HaOmer, they should count Al Sfirat Shivanakiyam.
That's what I'm saying, that's what I'm trying to answer. Say why? There's no hana'ah from that. So why would we make a bracha on that situation?
I think we're confusing the two brachos here. The first discussion is about why is there no bracha that's recited on counting the 7 days, the same way we all have the practice to recite a bracha every night that we count Sfirat HaOmer. The second question is, why is there no Shehecheyanu when we count Sfirat HaOmer? And that was a discussion because there's no hana, because it's not an enjoyable mitzvah. It's something that unfortunately gives us pain when we remind ourselves of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. So the answer that's given is because it's very easy to invalidate that count. If you're going to start counting and you're going to make a bracha the first night of the 7 clean days, then on day 3 the person has an emission, the whole thing is over. So it turns out, everything I did retroactively is a bracha levatala. And therefore we assume a bracha should not be recited. Okay. Now similar, yeah?
Forgive me if this is an ignorant question.
There is no such thing. A very interesting question. I think, I don't know for sure, but I think that most of the brachas were probably instituted in the same time period. The rabbis who decided that we should have this institution of brachas decided across the board that we should.
So everything that we used to do in some ritual that we could no longer do, the next year, immediately they instituted, all these.
I think you're touching on a larger point, if I can just digress for a minute to address that point. I think it's an important point to be aware of. Think about in the times when they had a Beis Hamikdash, okay? I don't believe that there were any shuls then at the time. Can you imagine Jewish communities without shul? So your whole connection to Judaism was the 3 times a year, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, when he went to the Beis HaMikdash. Otherwise, there was no davening. There was no such thing as davening. There was no communal davening. Why do we have to come together to daven? Because we need to say Kaddish, we need to say Kedusha. There was no Kaddish, there was no Kedusha. That was an institution that came along after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Anshei Knesset HaGedola realized, what's going to happen? We're not going to have a Jewish community anymore. There's nothing to hold the people together. Until this point, we had the Beis HaMikdash. That was the focal point of the Jewish community. And that's where they went for their spiritual recharge. But what's going to be now? What's going to be now that we don't have the Beis HaMikdash? What's going to hold the Jewish people together? You know what the answer is? A shul. And how are we going to make sure that people stay connected to a shul? We're going to say you have to daven. And you have to daven not just by yourself, you have to daven and say Baruch Hu and Kaddish and Kedusha. And that is going to ensure that the Jewish people will stick together. It was a tremendous foresight that they had to institute the tefillos that they did at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It was incredible.
So, by the way, if you take a look and see why the 10 tribes lost, they were idolaters way before the people in Yerushalayim were, because there was no shul.
They had nothing.
And also they blocked their way to get there. That's what the kings would do. They blocked their way to...
So they had no sense of connection. Yeah.
Why they fell into idolatry, and they lost, and the Yehuda and Benjamin were the last ones to hold out, because mm-hmm. they were right there.
It's a very amazing point to think about it. Think about a second issue. What do you think Shabbos was like in the days of the Torah? If you were a biblical Jew living with Moshe Rabbeinu, pretty religious Jew, right? I'm the star student of Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm going to all of his classes. I know everything there is to know. What did Shabbos look like in those days? Ever think about that? So Shabbos, if you just lived a biblical life like Moshe Rabbeinu, so Shabbos, you made sure to refrain from working your field. Most people were in the agricultural business, so you made sure not to work the fields. You made sure not to do any melacha that is prescribed by the Torah. However, I would imagine that Shabbos, they probably all were handling money, right? Muktzah was something that was instituted way later on. So they were probably all handling money. They were all going shopping on Shabbos. There was nothing wrong with that. The Torah never says anything wrong. That's something that came later. So probably all the malls were open and everybody was doing all their business and shopping and exchanging money and giving credit cards, and as long as he didn't write. Right? There's a malacha of writing on Shabbos, but otherwise there's no problem to buy and to sell and to give money and to exchange money and to invest. So what kind of Shabbos is that? If such a person would walk into my shul, I would say, get out, it's a sheketz. Wouldn't give him an aliyah. Right? What do you mean? Is it Machal Shabbos? What do you mean? Moshe Rabbeinu, that's the way he lived Shabbos. Moshe Rabbeinu went to the mall every Shabbos with his family and bought whatever they needed to buy. They were busy working all week long. Shabbos was the day they went to have a good time. Can you imagine if that's what Shabbos would be today? What has kept the Jewish people alive? Shabbos! Shabbos and the sanctity of the synagogue are the two things that have kept the Jewish people going throughout all the millennia. And that was the foresight of those Anshei Knesset HaGedolah at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, who said, what are we going to do to make sure that the Jewish people are going to have something to hold on to? The answer number one is tefillah in a shul. We're going to do something to make sure that Jewish people are going to stay united and rallied around a Beis HaKnesses, around a shul. Number two, we're going to institute Shabbos to be lived and experienced in a totally different way. Shabbos is now going to be experienced not the way Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. Now Shabbos is going to be with muktzah, and Shabbos is going to be with no more exchanging, no more buying, no stores are allowed to be open. Shabbos is going to be changed forever. You're going to have to sit at home with your family and just enjoy the time spending time with your family alone. That's what has kept the Jewish people alive. How many people have become religious because they've been exposed to the beauty of what a Shabbos table is, of what a Shabbos experience is? Imagine if on Shabbos we had the ability to use all of our cell phones and to go shopping and to go exchanging money and investing and doing everything doing all week long. What would Shabbos be to us? We would just be another day in the office. The Chachamim, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, had such incredible insight, such foresight to understand we need to do something. And that was at the same time that they instituted all those brachos and everything else, but there was a bigger picture involved. So that's the short answer to your very astute observation, very important question, but I think it's something to consider, it's something to think about. Look how much they have changed the destiny of the Jewish people forever. Look how much they have changed what the life of a Jew looks like forever. It was an incredible power that they had, and it was something that really was done with incredible foresight. I think so. I think it's something to really take note of. Interesting. That's very correct. It's not at all similar. It's very, again, the rabbis can't just get up and do whatever they want. There's a formula for how things are allowed to be done and when they're allowed to be done and how we implement them. And you have to be from that ilk of people that has the ability to institute anything. But in that generation, they did so with great courage. You know, in every generation, we've had facets of the Jewish community that have tried to institute their own things. Some were accepted and some of them were not, because they were just instituted by fringe elements of the community. But it's something that it's worth taking note of the fact that they have really changed the face of Jewish history. and of Jewish life. I think it's worthy of being mentioned. So over here, the Radvaz writes that the reason we don't recite a bracha on counting the seven pure days leading up to going to the mikveh is because we have to be concerned. Maybe the person will have an emission and then they're going to be out. All those brachas retroactively are going to be considered a bracha levatala. So, what about Sfiros HaOmer? What about Sfiros HaOmer?
No such a risk.
No such a risk? Really? You've never forgotten?
Forget, but forgetting is not... We don't assume that somebody's going to forget.
So that's the question. So some Achronim suggest it depends what the likelihood is. What is the likelihood that someone's going to forget to count Sfiros HaOmer, and what is the likelihood that in the 7 days of counting clean days, someone is going to have an emission? Well, the likelihood for that is much higher than the likelihood of somebody forgetting Sfiros HaOmer. And that's why some say that's the answer to this question. Obviously, mistakes happen all the time, and we know that could happen. But that's the question with regard to how do we draw the line between different various counting mitzvahs that we find. When do we say you have a right to say, no, count with the bracha, don't worry, it won't be invalidated because you're probably not going to make a mistake. And when do we say, no, you got to be very careful, maybe a mistake will be made. Take for another example, I see we're almost out of time. Let's say we have an institution called a ger katan. What does a ger katan mean? Ger katan means you're able to convert a child in infancy to become a Jew. How do we do that? What's the mechanism? The child can't accept. The child is 3 months old. How are you converting the child? He doesn't want to do this. She doesn't want to do this. How do you know that this is in the best interest of the child? So the answer is, the Beis Din takes upon themselves that we want to take this child in because under the circumstances they're being raised by a religious family and it would seem that it's going to be in the best of interest of the child to be raised as a Jewish kid. So therefore we can put the child in the mikvah and say, a bracha, asher kachan mitzvah v'tzivanu, to go to the mikvah, right? So we make that bracha and that child is now going to become Jewish because we project into the future that it's probably going to be okay. What happens when the kid becomes bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah? So the halacha is now you have to inform them. You have to tell them, by the way, you were converted as a young child. We thought, we projected that it was going to be in your best of interest. You have a choice. Do you want this or do you not? We just had a story recently in one of the local yeshivas where there was a kid whose parents never told him. And at 17 years old, when he was struggling with his teenage years, and many teenagers struggle with many things, but he was struggling with Judaism in general. And they told him at 17 years old that, by the way, you were converted as a young child. You have the option to opt out. And he said, I'm out of here. Like, I don't want this. And he wanted to, like, how long do I have to make this decision? I have to make the decision right now? This is a very serious decision for me. I have to figure out, what am I going to do? My family is going to disown me. I'm going to be the non-Jew living in the house. If I cook food in the house, it's going to become trey. It's bishalakum. And if I touch the wine. It was a very serious shaila. And this happens every so often. So the Chassam Sofer asks, if that's the case, that a child always has the ability at 12 or 13 years old to reject everything that was done in the past, how do we make a bracha when we put them in the mikvah in the first place? Maybe it will turn out that 13 years ago we made a bracha levatala. So the Chassam Sofer answers, come on, what's the likelihood? You have a child who is nurtured, who is raised in a family, whose parents love him, who is adopted and who is converted, and is treated like a regular child in the family. So what is the possibility? Again, there's always that possibility, but what's the likelihood of that child at 13 years old really saying, no, I reject everything, I don't want to be Jewish, I don't want to be a part of this family, I'm not interested? It could happen, but it's very unlikely, and that's why the Chassam Sofer says, we don't have to worry about that possibility. If we did, he says, then what do we do about the fact that the child was running around for the last 13 years and he was touching all the wines in my house? I have to throw out all the wines now because a non-Jew was handling the wines in my house? Or do we say, let's say they used to have children that got married at young ages. Once the kid was old enough to understand marriage, which I guess in those days was 6 or 7 years old, it seems, so the child was able to get married. Nowadays, don't try it at home. But imagine you have a Jewish boy who gets married at 6, 7, 8 years old, gets married to a wonderful girl, and then at 12, 13, they tell him, by the way, you have the option to opt out. He says, oh, that's a good idea. I'm not interested in being Jewish. So what happens? So now his wife is married to a non-Jew. What's happening here? How can you say such a thing? So says the Chassam Sofer, it's true. He has the option to do that, but we don't have to worry about that possibility. It's so unlikely it happens. It's very unusual that it happens, but it happens every so often. So that's with regard to that. But when it comes to Sfiros HaOmer, the likelihood is that the person will start counting and they'll go to shul every night and they'll probably remember to count throughout the duration of the sphere, certainly today when we have the ability to have texts and emails which remind us very easily, so that really is a far less likelihood that we'll forget in our generation. What time are we supposed to daven?
1:35.
Can we just close with 2 minutes? Hashkafa? Then we'll take a question? Okay, I'm sorry. So Rav Soloveitchik writes, let's just close. Why is it that counting takes such a central role? You look on the second side of the page. Why is it that counting has such a central role to Judaism? As we said, you have Shemitah, you have Yovel, you have the seven clean days, you have the days of mourning, you have Avelis, you have Shiva, you have Shloshim, you have Yud Beis Chodesh. Why do we count so much? Why do we have such a focus in so many various mitzvahs, so many aspects of life around counting? And Rav Soloveitchik writes, because the reason is that when you count, it means, if tonight is day 23, it means I believe that yesterday was 22 and I believe that tomorrow is day 24. And that's what Judaism is all about. Judaism is all about recognizing that there was a yesterday, that there was a lot of rich heritage that came before me, and there's going to be a rich legacy that's going to come after me. I'm going to have children and I'm going to raise those children to be like me and better. And there's going to be a Jewish future, and the Jewish future is going to be brighter than it ever has been. But that is all built on our appreciation for the Mesorah that's been given and handed down to us. And we have to pledge that we want to give that Mesorah down to the next generation as well. Says Rav Soloveitchik, that's why it's so important that the Torah gives such a central focus and a theme in so many different mitzvahs to this idea of counting. That a person in Judaism always needs to remind themselves that, yes, I'm living the present, I'm doing whatever I can. But there's a greater context of Jewish history. There's all that came before me, and there's all that's going to come, God willing, after me. And it's my obligation in the times that I live to make sure that I invest to the best of my ability in that rich heritage that was handed down to me, to make sure that I invest in that and give it as a rich legacy that will be given on and perpetuated for future generations to come as well. So I think it's something to think about as we count the days of Sfiras Omer, not only the halacha, but also to think about this central theme, this idea of counting, and why it is so important to us that counting is always considered to be a part of our consciousness. Yeah, question.